Awesome. Thanks very much. And thanks for coming back. Some of you might have been in the first session and some of you might not have been. So just a little bit about myself, 40 years in public safety positions overall and studying undergraduate degree in criminal justice and continue to work in the field. 34 years, 3 months, 2 days with the Chicago Police Department, including 20 years supervising, directing, managing and assessing law enforcement supervisors and executives in my role as deputy chief for crime control strategies, which included our CompStat group. I ran the CompStat sessions. The presentation is mine. I don't represent any organizations other than myself and Secure 1776, which is my website. What we want to cover in this session is all levels leadership, looking at three main points: understanding the oath, formal and informal leadership, and leadership is time sensitive. All right, so under understanding oath, taking the oath, and why the oath matters. All right, so we talked about this a little bit in the tragedy-free policing session about the importance of an oath and that we're bound to the Constitution. What I wanted to jump in here with is trying to take a lesson from comedy. Comedians oftentimes help us understand difficult concepts in different ways. And so Jerry Seinfeld in season 3 gave us a little glimpse of a car rental reservation. All right, so Jerry Seinfeld's obviously given us a little insight there. He tells the car rental agent, when she responds, I know why we have reservations. He goes, I don't think you do. If you did, I'd have a car, right? That's the basic bottom line, all right? Anyone can take the reservation. It's the holding the reservation that's the most important part. So as police officers, okay, what's the most important part of your oath? Taking the oath or keeping the oath, all right? What's the more challenging and difficult? Anyone can take the oath. It's keeping the oath that is the challenge and part of our topic of what we're discussing about today. So to ensure individual liberty and public safety, the policing profession is bound specifically to the United States Constitution. That is on purpose, right? Unlike in England or in Australia where you might swear an oath to the Queen, okay, here you swear an oath to the Constitution, the rule of law, right? And you serve the people, right? So it's important for you to know the words we and if were not in your oath. Remember taking your oath? You can remember that you used the word I, but you stated your name, but you did not utter the words we and if. You did not say, I will keep my oath if he keeps his oath. All right? I will do it if we all do it together. Okay? What are we supposed to learn from that? What two fundamental points do we understand from the fact that we and I are not in the oath? Anyone give me one? How is the oath held? Who holds the oath? Personal, it's individual. You hold the responsibility as an individual. Once you swear an oath, okay, to become a law enforcement officer or in the military, but in our case, our professional law enforcement, once you swear the oath is your personal obligation. It does not belong to anybody else. It does not belong to the chief of police. It does not belong to your sergeant, okay? It does not belong to your fellow officers. It belongs to you as an individual. It's your individual obligation. Your oath is your individual obligation. And by swearing the oath, you committed to doing your duty, okay, even if you are alone in doing your duty. And then by that fact, you're committing to lead by example, both within your profession and in your community. So everyone who took the oath is a leader within law enforcement community, right? So do the challenges of apprehension, even fear among fellow officers, incompetence maybe among some of your supervisors, okay, poor management by your command staff, do they make your job more difficult? Absolutely. Do they lessen the obligations of your oath? No. The oath is yours. The responsibility is yours. Okay. So it's one of those things that as police officers, everyone as a new officer gets to hear certain phrases coming along the way. First time you call a detective, you ain't got nothing, kid. Okay. Right? First time you talk, ride with an, how much time you got on the job, kid? Okay. Well, you should have been in the police when? okay? Because you can't do police work anymore, right? Right. Everyone learns these phrases along the way and utters them at some point along their career as well, right? The formal and informal leadership, the boss and beyond the boss, okay, and highly effective organizations. All right, so when we first think about a leader, right, we typically think about a position, authority, perhaps a president, okay, a general or a mayor. And most questions, what we're talking about is the boss is someone who is officially in charge, and that's what we describe as positional leadership, all right? Right, they are a leader because of the job they hold. Right, the competence of leadership is much more comprehensive than that. And what we understand from our own experience is that some of our bosses are terrible. Right, they're just horrible at it. They're not good at it. Okay, the organization doesn't succeed with them. Right, people can oftentimes be miserable with them. All right, so just because they're a boss doesn't mean that they're effective, which means they're really cutting against the grain of what the concept of leadership is all about. Our best formal leaders understand that leadership is about persuasion, right? Leadership is about persuasion. And the best leaders do not rely on the rank alone to get people to act, right? President Eisenhower, this is a perfect quote for a law enforcement setting. You do not lead by hitting people over the head. That's assault, not leadership. Perfect quote for us, right? We understand that concept, okay? The beatings will continue until morale improves, all right? So, Eisenhower would tell us that the leader who resorts to those tactics isn't getting it done. Ancient Greece philosopher, historian, and military leader Xenophon of Athens said, "The true test of a leader is whether his followers will adhere to his cause from their own volition, enduring the most arduous hardships without being forced to do so, and remaining steadfast in the moments of greatest peril." Doing your duty, even though the boss may not be there, and it may cost you everything you have in this life. That's leadership. Okay? So the people who are out there every day performing the duties as a law enforcement officer, exercising their responsibilities consistent with their oath, okay, are demonstrating leadership on this level of devotion. Fundamentally, leadership is about persuasion. Leadership does not require the leader to hold a rank. As we know, many persuasive people, all right? So every department has the guy that's good at DUIs. Every department has the guy that's good at interviews. Everyone has the guy that's good with domestic violence situations or the woman that's good with gun arrests, whatever it is, okay? And it's not uncommon for one set of officers to reach out to and seek guidance from another set of officers because we know who leaders are and they don't have to hold rank. However, your best formal leaders not only utilize their own informal skills, they draw upon and help to develop the informal leadership of those around them, including those that they supervise, right? So we're going to take another clip from our video. So we're going to take this clip from Braveheart, and we're going to consider formal and informal leadership. Wow, I mean, that's just something. Gotta love a patriot. You know, if I was Scottish, I would be that guy, okay? I mean, that's just phenomenal, right? Gotta love a patriot. Gotta love someone who's willing to do the hard thing. And you have to look at him as, without question, a leader, right? Without a question, William Wallace's leader. If you know the film and you know the run-up to that, is that there was other leaders that were on the scene before he was there, and they were some of the British, the Scottish nobles, and they were looking to cut a deal with the British king as soon as he arrived on the battlefield, because the British king, Edward I, came with quite a sizable formal army that was armed with the best weapons of the day. They were well-disciplined. They were well-prepared. They were experienced war fighters, okay? And their just mere emergence on the field struck awe and fear into the Scottish men who had gathered together, okay? So you have William Wallace there, okay? And he knows that he can't just rely on his position as somewhat of a Scottish nobleman. Okay, his father and his grandfather had been on a certain line. So he has a certain standing and status, a certain rank within the community. He knows he cannot rely on that alone to get this army of his to stand, because his army is all volunteer and they could just simply go home. So he understands without a question of doubt that this is an opportunity that he must draw upon his own personal skills as an informal leader, because he can't just tell them to fight. He must inspire them to fight. Okay, but there's also this guy and others like him. Imagine you're on a field of battle, okay? You're soon to face the biggest, most powerful army in your part of the world, okay? And you have a stick, okay? You're standing in the front line and you have nothing but a stick, right? That's a display of informal leadership. If he runs, what happens to the guy next to him holding the sword? Okay, if 15 or 20 of them turn and run immediately, okay, what impact does that not only have on those that are standing there, but what impact does that have on William Wallace himself? All right, so he needs that man to stand his ground. The impact of his impact on others becomes fundamental. In highly effective organization, all right, leadership occurs at all levels, all right, and involves that guy as well. Highly effective organizations are comprised of highly effective people who are performing at all levels within the group. Right? Army Ranger Kenny Thomas was part of the Mogadishu drama during the end of the Clinton administration, where they were sent with bad rules of engagement to deal with terrorists and warlords who were stealing international aid packages to feed the hungry in Somalia. They had targets that they were going after, okay, and that incident goes very poorly. Right? Kenny Thomas is now a country music artist, and I encourage you to look at his stuff. He's got a couple of really impressive albums, including one that's Flags of Our Fathers, where he talks about these types of issues, and he presents a very compelling case for what it is to be in a highly effective organization. As being an Army Ranger, okay, he had lots of experiences. And in his book, Get It On, which I've gifted more than 30 times to command staff, to supervisors who worked for me when I was in the police department, Thomas talks about many different escapades and circumstances, including Private David Floyd. Private David Floyd was struggling as a paratrooper, and very early on in their training as in the Rangers, he was the whole squad was on a run. Thomas was a sergeant, all right, and Thomas made had broken the record for the run that they were on as an individual, all right? And when he got back to base, right, his master sergeant chewed him out because Private David Floyd failed to meet the minimum standard time, okay? And he told him that Floyd's time was his responsibility, and so the entire squad ran the course again because Floyd couldn't make the time. So as they were going forward in this, Floyd becomes the machine gunner, and Thomas makes a compelling case for that Thomas needs to be an expert in that weapon system, because if he fails to be an expert in that weapon system, the squad can fail. If the squad fails, the platoon is in trouble, okay? If the platoon is in trouble, then the entire mission is at risk. And it all hinges on whether Private David Floyd, all right, is able to do his job. So that concept of all levels leadership is embedded within the Rangers. And so to get an inscribed copy or autographed copy of that book from Kenny Thomas, he will make the initials of it of RLW, which is Rangers Lead the Way. Okay, and as his career goes forward into the through this, and he talks about how he was talking about re-upping and what he was doing, and the drill instructor that he had been training him says, the world needs Ranger doctors. The world needs Ranger policemen. Right? The world needs Ranger leaders in all types of descriptions. And it's a form of leadership that is essential to effective teams. So Thomas asked the reader to ask the question to themselves as to who's more important, the special operator who must take the shot, okay, or the helicopter pilot who flew them there. Who's more important?
Or equally important.
Who's more important, the helicopter pilot or the navigator? Who's more important, the navigator or the mechanic that made sure the helicopter was ready to fly? Right? Thomas makes the case that they each, in their own way, are the key piece of the puzzle that makes sure that the mission is a success. Fundamentally, within law enforcement, we are struggling. Right? Far too often, right, command staff looks at individual officers as expendable. Right? This one's not very good. This one's not meeting the mission. This one is beyond redemption. And they do not make the attempt to ready their staff to get them to the position of skill to meet the minimum standard that's necessary. Sergeants and lieutenants and supervisors along the way make excuses, okay, do not hold people accountable. And officers themselves not only don't hold standards for themselves, they make excuses for not accomplishing what they need to accomplish, not accepting their challenge of being the key piece of the puzzle that makes it all come together. Those in formal leadership responsibilities have the responsibility to help every member within the organization understand this key concept. It's not acceptable to let underperformance go unaddressed, right? And the individual members have a responsibility to meet the standard of their own performance and to help others meet the standard. You can't just be the guy that looks out after your own. You can't be the one that says, well, I met my objectives, I do what I need to do, I don't worry about what the rest of the team is capable of doing. That's not what we're looking for within the profession. That's not what we're looking for within leadership. All right. Action can be required even when it's just you. Who shall we send? All right. So let's take a look here. All levels leadership is vital in the profession, all right, particularly when lives can be on the line. All right. Events in policing can spiral quickly out of control, requiring immediate action to prevent and respond to tragedy. As we saw in our session on tragedy-free policing is a trap for us in the procession that's being put forward for us right now. There's those who are looking to create anarchy within the country, to create a division between policing and the police in the community. And creating this tension allows them to then create a system of lawlessness. With this lawlessness that we have, you have then reduce public safety, all right? So the need to act becomes time sensitive. When something is occurring now, all right, you must respond to it. So our officers are sent on a continual basis to incidents that are already tragic or at grave risk of becoming tragic, and they need to be prepared to act, okay, and respond in a way that the community will accept. Such are leadership moments, even when there's no supervisor on the scene. Fundamentally, our officers understand this, all right? Our best officers excel at this, and our best officers propel the organization forward and take care of the profession. Right, so let's take a look at this shots fired call on July 4th, the block party, actually just 30 minutes into the new day on July 5th. The Toledo police officers were responding to a call of shots fired. There had been numerous calls of disturbances on the 4th of July on this block on Lawrence Avenue in Toledo. They have an annual 4th of July party at this location. The area is a high-crime area. Like most officers on the 4th of July, they're anticipating a lot of disturbance calls. They're anticipating a lot of shots fired calls. As those officers are driving there, perhaps they're hoping it's just more fireworks. Perhaps they take a moment to remember Officer Anthony Hussein Dia, who died 1 year prior answering a disturbance call in Toledo. So he might have been on their minds as they respond to the disturbance call. But what we know with certainty is that once they arrive on scene, they know that they will be required to make a quick assessment as to what's going on, whether it's fireworks or gunfire, whether there's danger to themselves, whether there's danger to fellow officers who might be responding, whether there's danger to the larger community, and that they will then, once they make that assessment, they'll be obligated to take action. All right, so how did that day go? Right? So you're on patrol with your partner. It's a 10-4 unit, two officers, so that's good news, right? You didn't come up on that by yourself. But even as you arrive on the scene, what's going on? Chaos. Is it even clear as to who the good guys and the bad guys are? No. Who do they immediately see, you know, as they're getting out? So in the first moments, okay, when they first moments, so play it again. Listen to the, they're pulling up on the scene, okay? They're at this house, all right? And what you're initially hearing, and then the interaction between the two officers and they're going to get out of the car. Listen to what you're hearing and then what they see. Fireworks? What is that? What is that noise? Racing car? A conscious decision. They're getting out. Okay, so the decision to get out of the car, what kind of decision would you describe that? What's that decision? How would you describe that decision to get out of the car? What's going through their mind?
Being courageous.
Certainly being courageous. So could they have just gone here and says, can we get a sergeant over here? It's a command decision, right? We need to get, maybe get the chief.
Time sensitive,
right. No, can't wait. Right. So in very short order, what do people start screaming at them? Can you hear? People have been shot, right? So they know they have shooting victims. So is there any doubt that this is more than shots fired? I mean, more than fireworks. No, there's no doubt. And it's really more than shots fired. You've got shooting victims, okay? Is the threat over?
No.
No. How many threats are there? Multiple threats, okay? Spread out in what? And what time of day is it?
Nighttime.
Okay. How about that preparation for duty? What did we have? What did the officer have that was vitally necessary as he was racing from that car into chaos?
Flashlight.
Pretty darn good flashlight too, right? It was able to shine. Okay, take light. Okay. What is he doing? Okay, he's forced. He's got people running at him. Okay, so he's trying to do what?
Assess.
Right. Screen. Okay. Are they offenders running at me? Okay, so how many of you had seen this video or heard about this incident before today? One, okay. Had the police officer shot somebody who didn't have a gun, would we have heard about this incident? Absolutely. Absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt. Okay, so we know that the officers put themselves in grave personal danger, and would we agree that they've been dispatched to an incident that is tragic or at grave risk of turning tragic right from the very start? Okay, so this notion that you can send the police out, okay, and live under the standard that says they will never take any action that might cause harm, okay, right? Never cause any harm, all right? That they will never utilize force because they should always win the discussion by persuasion. Okay, and they will never make a mistake, right? Realizing that these are real life situations that do occur, although this one is highly dramatic, okay, it's a recognition that tragedy-free policing, or else, okay, is a deliberately unattainable standard to create circumstances in which the police will make mistakes, okay, or will take actions that cause harm, okay, and will be perceived by mistakes by other people, right? Without a doubt. So, multiple gunmen, right? 80 shots were fired once the officers got on the scene, okay? None by the responding officers. So when you're talking about the narrative out there that the police are gunning down, okay, people, okay, there's an epidemic of police violence, could you tell from the video as to whether this was a minority community or not a minority community?
Minority
community, right? The officer is white, okay? Does it fit the narrative of policemen, one, not caring about minority communities? Does it fit the narrative that police officers are quick to harm minority citizens? No. That's part of the reason why you don't know about this video, right? 12 people in total were shot, including a 17-year-old who was killed, right? So this is no minor incident. And it's first responded to by two Toledo police officers who come into the scene of chaos, right? Why? Why are the officers there? They were sent. And what obligation do they have that holds them to respond as opposed to saying, well, that looks pretty messed up. I think we'll code this one out, right? Fireworks squad, that's what I think. I think it was more fireworks, right? Had the police not responded, had they waited down the block, what would have been the argument? They didn't care. They let people be shot down and be killed. They were worried about themselves and they were about the community, right? So it's a complex scenario, right? Without question, this is a display of all levels leadership. because these officers had been trained. They know what they're supposed to do. But it's more than carrying out a simple task. It's an obligation that they're carrying out at grave personal danger. It is an obligation that they're meeting, okay, of their own volition. Could they have just stayed in the car? Could they have backed up and drove away? Yep. Could they have pretended they didn't see it? Could they have delayed longer? Because you really saw the whole run-up of them driving to the scene in the first slide, okay, only cut a few seconds, okay? So, you know, it's a short amount of time. This could have been, you know, stop for a little coffee, maybe just check that tire. I think it's a little low, okay? You know, because it's 4th of July, a lot of crazy stuff going on, all right? They did not do this. Does this meet the standard, okay, of a situation in which these officers know they have an obligation, okay? And are they carrying out the mission? Is their boss on scene?
No.
No. There's lots of citizens on the scene who will be very quick to analyze and pontificate, okay, and to criticize, all right? And so if they don't do their duty, they run risk of being ratted out by somebody else. But they're not under direct supervision, and they're carrying out their duty, all right? Without question, they helped quell the gunfire, all right? It doesn't happen easily, and they're doing a lot. What kind of, are they just passively going through here? No, they're gaining ground, okay? They're making an opportunity, they're taking the opportunity to communicate to the citizens, and what are they providing? They're shouting. And they're giving clear, concise, verbal direction on what the citizens should do. And they're making assessments, so they have two people that are side of the car, okay, can't see their hands, okay? So, being very specific, do not move, okay? Do not move, okay? When the officer's on the radio communicating what's going on, how does he sound? Amazingly calm. We have multiple shooters in all directions, okay? It's clear as day. It's not screaming in panic. It's not saying the world's coming to an end, okay? It's just being very specific about what the problem is and what the task is, okay? Absolutely a phenomenal example of all levels of leadership. All right, many in our profession have been knocked back down the hills, and it's understandable, okay? We get it, right? So when we're looking at what has happened in 2020, I like to call it 2020, the year like no other, okay, between the COVID and the election and the Minneapolis incident, okay, the rioting, the protesting, the changes in policy, the changes in law, okay, 2020 has been a catastrophic year for public safety and for the profession. It's no doubt, okay, that this is the case. So officers being apprehensive is logical, okay? Officers not rushing in, good judgment, okay? Needlessly not taking on unnecessary risk in general as far as like, oh, we're not going to do, we're not going to do, search warrants, okay, that aren't properly exercised. So there's no corner cutting. Right? There's no making things up. There's no we'll work it out, all right? There's an understanding that these are times in which police officers must be absolutely, abundantly clear on what policy and the law requires of them and that they must, to their greatest ability possible, attempt to meet the expectations of the community to rise to the highest standards of the profession. Recognizing that they're human beings and in a chaotic scene, they may make a judgment that in the light of day, right, with 23 lawyers, okay, may look badly. Had they shot a 16-year-old girl, okay, who was running out, okay, this would have been the argument for yet another round of bash the police. The county, the local, the state police have been designed deliberately under our system of government as a check against both tyranny and anarchy, right? We don't have a national police force for a specific reason. We don't have a national police force because we want local control. We want the police to be bound by philosophy to the Constitution, and we want them to be bound by operations to the community. A local community. that you police a local community consistent with local expectations and local concerns. So what the policing need is in Elkhart, Indiana, is different than in Cleveland, Ohio, which is different than New York City, which is different than Los Angeles, which is different than Chicago. But in each location, the obligation is to police in a manner that's consistent with local expectations. For some, this is a problem. And it should not be missed that the conundrum that public safety and the profession are facing now is not accidental. It is a deliberate attempt to create anarchy. And so the question that we should be encouraging our community and our community leaders to start asking is, who benefits from lawlessness? Okay. Some have benefited. Some have benefited from COVID. Okay. It isn't small businesses, but Amazon's done well. Okay. So the question gets to be over time is that when you see a deliberate course of actions as to what is the agenda in creating lawlessness in so many of America's communities. And clearly, when you're looking at the groups that are fostering the divisions, you're looking at a division that is meant to create collapse into the government, right? It is a direct attack to the Constitution, right? Meeting the challenge, it must be a proactive one, right? Again, we're looking for broad community outreach, right, to our community partners, and we have to reawaken the bond with local policing, with our veteran groups, our church groups, and others, because it's essential that local police regain ground lost, not necessarily directly with these groups, but indirectly with these groups, because these groups have been quieted and they've been hesitant to be seen as being close to the police for fear of taking on the wrath that has been directed against the police. So outreach on our end to these groupings becomes essential to get them to have the courage to speak up, right? And then it becomes essential that we stay loyal to our oath, striving to maintain standards of conduct. Now, standards of conduct means that there's a tremendous burden right now on all levels. It's not easy to do this, but you have to do your best recognizing that the expectations are high. So here's one of our greatest leaders, and this is from 1860, so we're at the very beginning of the Civil War, and Lincoln tells us in the Cooper Institute speech, it's the end of the speech where he's trying to prepare the nation for the challenges ahead, hoping to avoid the Civil War. It says, "Neither let us be slandered from our duty by false accusations against us, nor frightened from it by menaces of destruction to the government, nor of dungeons to ourselves. Let us have faith that right makes right, and in that faith, let us to the end do our duty as we understand it." All right, menaces of destruction to the government. Have we seen that? And dungeons to ourselves, what's that? Our own liberty, right? Seeing officers accused of crimes and placed in legal jeopardy. And Lincoln's advice to us, okay, is to tell us that we should not be dissuaded by these things. You obviously have to take these things important, but you have to make sure that you're willing to carry on forward, because you have to move forward with the notion that in the end, right will make might. Right. It's a deliberate attack. It's already weakened community relations, and lawlessness is growing in far too many communities. We see that, right? In Chicago, you know, if, on the website, I put stuff up. I've made references to Hadleyville, which is from the High Noon film with Gary Cooper, 1952, all right? And it's key to our understanding as to how things are progressing. All right, this notion of a community and the responsibility of the community itself to fight against lawlessness. The way forward has to be with a notion of the community of us. Right? The bottom line is, you are the cavalry. Right? That's just it. Okay? Because is the FBI coming? The fire department comes, but they come to pick up the bodies and they want to come after the gunfire, right? Right? They tend not to want to come while the gunfighting is still going on, right? So the obligation still rests with the profession, which makes it all the more worrisome on a certain level, and it makes it understandable as to why line officers are concerned. So in his book, Forward, Dr. David Jeremiah says, if you're not dead, you're not done, okay? Right? So a lot of retired guys here, and there's a lot of veteran officers here, right? So you came along the way, and you swore an oath to this profession, right? I swore the oath to the United States Constitution 7 times because I had the good fortune to be promoted, okay? Worked for 2 agencies, got promoted along the way. So was able to reap the rewards and satisfaction of individual personal achievement. But the obligation, even if I had only been a police officer on the Chicago Police Department and had not advanced in rank, still rests with me. So I was very lucky as a new captain, first officer who retired from my watch was a guy named Roger Terry. And Roger Terry was an interesting fellow. Lost the police car and the Humble Park riots at one point when he responded to an incident and they torched the car. And he was one of the police department's patrol specialists very early in a redevelopment of that program. And he had written 2 books on being a field training officer. And he had spoken passionately about his career to everyone who would listen, including young officers coming on the job, all the way up through the end of his career. And Roger Terry was able to accomplish something that I, as a deputy chief, would never be able to accomplish. He was able to continue to push a primary response police car in the city of Chicago all the way to the very last day of his career, where he had these little anecdotes, little things. He would tell the recruits to not throw away the empty pen. They get a ballpoint pen, and the pen would be empty, and he'd tell them, don't throw that away. What good was an empty pen?
Innovation.
Could be, right? Absolutely. But what else could it be when you're in a district that has a large number of high-rise buildings with buzzer front doors?
Right?
Doorstop. Because after you go into the call and you have to be buzzed in, okay, what's the problem if you close the door behind you? Your backup can't get to you. So training the young officers, make sure you leave that door open for you because you might need to have someone come get you, all right? So Roger Terry is getting ready to retire, all right? And when I had been on the watch as a captain, I would do my thing. And I remember as a new captain on the watch, the lieutenant comes to me at one point and says, it was Sunday, and he says, Cap, just want to let you know when the prior captain was here, we would let the sergeants handle the roll call on Sundays. And I said, oh, well, that's good. Captain Quaid's not here anymore, and we'll be going to roll call every day, right? Because that's my time to communicate to the officers as to what the expectations are. And so every day we'd go out, and I would issue the plan. It's about how we're doing today. And I would then go, if there was a lieutenant in roll call, lieutenant anything for the watch. I let the lieutenant have an opportunity because I'm trying to validate that the lieutenant matters. Her opinion, okay, and her leadership skills are important to the watch. I want her to be able to exercise that authority in my presence, in front of them, and to them. Then I would go one by one to the sergeant. Sarge, anything for the watch? Sarge, anything for the watch? And then when Roger Terry was there, I would say, senior man, anything for the watch? And Roger would come up with stuff from time to time. Okay, but I wanted to communicate to every officer in that room that Roger Terry's opinion, okay, his experience, and his individual leadership mattered to the safe operation of that watch and whether or not we were going to deliver a quality policing product. Okay? It mattered. Okay, and Roger Terry took that personally and came prepared. So on the last day, Roger's last day, okay, I'm going, I can't have a guy come here 27 years, okay, and then it's going to be his last day, and then like next week, I'm going to say, so where's Roger? Oh, he retired last week. That's not going to work. Yeah, we have an annual recognition thing, okay, Christmas time, all the retirees come, okay, but you still got to, there's got to be something on the last day, right? So I bought a plaque, okay, bought food, okay, held back additional roll call so that when Roger Terry came to his last roll call, I had the other watch from the day watch come. We filled that room and we did a stand-up inspection roll call with Roger Terry, okay, as the reviewing officer, okay, and I had the entire watch render a salute because a career in policing successfully completed with his health and his reputation intact needed to be celebrated, needed to be acknowledged, right? So we did that. We came back. It was good, right? I enjoyed it. Okay, it was good. I felt good about it. Then, 30 minutes later, Roger Terry comes into my office, sits in the chair in front of my desk, and cried and said, "No one in my entire career has done anything that made me feel like that." And I was grateful that at least we got it right on the last day. Right? Because leadership has to happen at all levels, and that happens by treating your people with respect. That happens with acknowledging that highly effective organizations have highly effective people operating at all levels. It's astonishing to me, okay? And all that still, you call 911, they still come. Mentioned in the prior session. I must have listened to 100,000 radio calls, okay, in 40 years in public safety. Not a single time, did I hear an officer being dispatched say, "Well, what race are they?" before they went. "Who are they?" before they went. I did hear them say, "What do they need? Where are they at?" And witnessed them expose themselves to grave personal danger to meet the obligations of their oath. That's impressive. That's the profession I joined. That's the profession I'm still loyal to. And in the words of Dr. Jeremiah, "I'm not dead. I'm not done. Policing is a calling, okay? God has a plan, okay? And as long as you still have breath, you have the ability and the obligation to stay loyal to your oath and however you can, and to assist those who are actively engaged in the field." So, and I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" Then I said, "Here am I. Who should I send? Who shall I send? Who shall I send?
Send me.
Who shall I send? 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 I'm so proud of you. I'm Tom Lemmer, and I'm standing in a room of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. I'm proud of you all.